Hey everyone, this is Geek Radio on KPFK. We are live right now on the KPFK Geek Radio Facebook page. We are going to be talking for the next hour about A Wrinkle in Time, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we are going to have a special guest in the studio as well, so stick around for that. My name is Chris.
I'm clinically depressed.
I'm Patrick.
I'm so done.
this is RJ and Ron.
I didn't know this was a therapy session.
It might be.
Hey, this is Ron.
You know what? Ron, in this segment that is coming up, you might have to play the arbitrator between a few of us. So prepare yourself.
Please.
Yeah,
tell
this should be interesting.
How did you come to this point? How do you feel?
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be happening. So let's jump right into it. We're going to be talking about A Wrinkle in Time. We might have some spoilers. We might not have some spoilers.
There will be spoilers.
It's a book that's been out for a really long time.
I think it came out in 62, I want to say.
Yeah, it's been out for over 50 years. So
that's why I haven't gotten around to reading it yet. It's just too soon.
So if it's something that you absolutely know nothing about, then maybe don't watch this. But we're trying not to put too many big spoilers in here so that you can still enjoy the film if this conversation actually convinces you to watch it, because that's what we're gonna be discussing right now. So Wrinkle in Time, big movie, just came out this weekend. It's been doing okay in the box office, but it has not beaten back Black Panther. Despite a very good opening night, it's kind of dipped a little bit in the numbers. The film is based off of a book, A Wrinkle in Time, that, as Patrick said, came out in the 1960s. And
yeah, he said that. I said I haven't read it.
RJ said it. RJ said it. Patrick said that he hadn't read it. It's just this side of the table is just one person. Sorry.
Okay.
You're like two talking heads.
I'm kind of like
I'm
out
one
of
person.
It right now. Yeah, I'm out of it because I haven't read the book or seen the movie, so I'm just going to be like, dude.
So you're just going to help us out.
Twiddling my thumbs.
You're just going to separate movie. Us when it comes to blows. This film, it is a YA book, a young adult book, and it's definitely a film that it's like PG. It's for like families and children, like general audiences. It stars several well-known actresses in the role of three of the kind of mentors.
Like the foremost actress would be Chris Pine.
If only. Chris Pine definitely is wearing a lot of makeup and lipstick in this film. He has very long hair now for some reason. But Oprah Winfrey plays Mrs. Witch. Reese Witherspoon plays Mrs. What's-It. And Mrs. Who is played by Mindy Kaling. And the star of the film playing Storm Reid, playing Meg is Storm Reid. Yeah, playing Storm Reid is Meg.
She plays herself.
Playing Meg. I like Storm Reid. That's a great character name.
That is.
It's actually her name.
Or
as an
a weatherman.
Yes. So she's playing herself. I mean, in addition, the character of Calvin is played by Levi Miller. And then Derek McCabe is Charles Wallace. And Chris Pine is also in this film. No, he's not playing a woman. He's Mr. Murray, who is Meg's dad in this film. So just kind of give a premise on this movie for anyone who hasn't seen it so you know what we're talking about. It's basically a wormhole movie. It's about traveling through space.
They make sure to put special mention that it's space and time.
It's really weird that it's called A Wrinkle in Time. It should be A Wrinkle in Space.
Yeah, that would make a bit more sense.
To be honest. But the premise of the story is that Meg's father, he's a scientist, and he figures out a way to wrinkle time and space. And one day he just goes somewhere and disappears, and no one knows where he is. Then they fast forward 4 years later, and it's her and her younger brother, who was just a very young child when their father disappeared. And they're trying to just dealing with everyday life, school, friends type bullying.
It's also
situations.
Special mention it's the fourth anniversary of his disappearance,
mm-hmm. Yes.
which does come in comes in a bit.
Exactly 4 years, because they hear on the radio, they say it, that or the TV or something, that it's been 4 years.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where the story comes in. And then after that, these three magical creatures appear to them who look like people, except one of them is very, very tall.
They don't explain this in the movie, but I believe in the book they are actually stars.
Yes.
Stars who took a physical form.
Yes. Yes. So they appear, and they basically tell them their father needs help, and they need to go with them to go help find their father. And then it's an adventure through space and time after that. So Patrick, I'm going to go to you first with your initial thoughts. I know.
Actually, no. I'm curious to see. I mean, I have a feeling I know. Okay. For the listeners, because you've already mentioned that there's going to be a fight.
Mm. Okay.
I want to
hear each side first before you weigh in.
And then I will be the tiebreaker, and then we'll need the arbitrator.
Okay. So right now, it seems the critical consensus for this film is kind of negative. So let's start with the
critic and general audience.
General audience is 67% right now.
Oh, did that go
Google.
Up?
Is that it on has gone up a
is
little
Is that
bit.
On what
Google.
Side? Oh, through Google.
Just to Google. I just quickly saw it when I was looking at the actors' names.
So let me first ask this. Yes. Both of you have read the book?
I have read the book.
Okay, I read it important. So long ago. Okay.
Yes, I definitely have read the book. Okay. All right, so critical consensus is a little bit negative right now. It's in the 40s, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes.
So it's currently standing, because, I mean, most places use Rotten Tomatoes. So currently, Rotten Tomatoes critical is 42, mm-hmm. audience is 33.
Dang, so that's way lower than Google.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Google is usually a really bad place to get reviews of anything because there's so few people who actually use that.
So two out of three people did not enjoy this movie.
Let's
and
see if that shakes out
let's,
this way.
let's see, RJ, if you were in the two camp or the one out of three
so
camp here.
So for everyone who just heard your description of the movie doesn't elaborate really. They go from point to point without really much meat to most of the story. I think I told you this before. I thought the best way to describe the movie is it's like something you'd find on the Disney Channel mixed with an after school special.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see kids enjoying it because the beginning especially seemed to drag on and it took a long time to actually get started. And I mean, the target audience is kids. Kids aren't going to want to get into it. For the older audience, it's philosophy 101 barely. So I could see kids getting something out of that, kind of learning to kind of expand how they view things. But for anybody else, there's not much there for family and there's not much there for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I completely, for once, I agree with all the reviews I've been seeing.
Is this some type of generational gap? Because obviously we have an older book that was released in the 60s, and we have to take in concept. Now, I'm kind of neutral on this because I, for one, have not read the book.
I think they do advance it well enough into present day.
They do, and I'll explain later how they do that.
Okay.
but yeah, so that's my thought is I agree with the lower reviews. Maybe I don't know if I'd go so far as the general 33% audiences seem to give it. It's below average, kind of slow, very thin story-wise, kind of deep as a puddle. But
all right.
Not to go into – I'll let you guys go in before we begin discussing it.
Okay, so
which one do you fall into?
I went into this film with pretty low expectations just based on these initial audience reviews and critic reviews. So I was a little bit worried about the film going in. But I knew that there were still a certain percentage of people who liked the film. I mean, for it to be in the 40s on Rotten Tomatoes, that means a little bit less than half people gave it a fresh rating. So a lot of people did like the film. And so I'm like, okay, I don't know which camp I'm going to fall in. I sit down in the theater and I start watching the movie, and I will agree that the beginning of the film might have a little bit of pacing issues, but I feel like I say that about almost every film that I review. There's just something about me in the beginning of films that I always have problems with the beginning. Rogue One, Black Panther, two films I enjoyed. I don't like the way either of those films begin. And A Wrinkle Time, I wouldn't say it was as extreme as those two films. I just thought it was just that there were just slightly a few things more that they should have done differently at the beginning, and I'll get into that more specifically that would have made it better and stronger at the beginning. But once the film really got into its actual plot and the swing of things and they were finished with the exposition of the characters.
Curious, when would you say that was?
I would say that it was probably a good 15, 20 minutes.
What event would you say is when they started getting into it?
I think that probably after Calvin shows up. Maybe a little bit after that. Because up until the point that Calvin shows up, I had a problem with the way that they did that. And basically, I'll just say it right now. I thought that when they were in the schoolyard and there was kind of the altercation and Meg throws the ball in the girl's face.
See, now I would say it doesn't
Yeah.
And before we get into full discussion, I would say it doesn't start until they go to leave that first planet where the flower creatures are.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that. I think they already got way into it. I think it got deeper after that, just like movies like Rogue One, you know, like the third act is like the best act. I feel like that started the best part of the film. But still, the middle part for me, it did not drag. I thought it was decent. But, yeah, no, I thought that in that scene with Meg and the girl at the beginning of the schoolyard, I felt like we should have seen Calvin. If we saw him, I don't know if we saw him in the background or not. We did. It was not clear enough to me. Like I didn't remember it. And then when Calvin shows up again, I'm like, who's this guy?
Well, I mean, he had a good like 5 seconds on the screen time, kind of.
It wasn't
reacting.
Yeah,
to it.
Unfortunately, yeah. I missed it, and I don't know how many people missed it. But that's just a personal thing. Like I just think that they should have done a little bit more with him. I don't know.
Oh yeah, and I'm not disagreeing with there. Yeah. I'm just saying he did. Have
they should have.
Yeah.
I think just having him show up at that point, like I felt like they should have had a little bit more exposition with his character, either by showing him maybe saying with a speaking line or something.
Well, something the book would have helped with.
Exactly.
Explaining.
Yeah. But I thought that's an easy thing that you can do. So that's one of the things I don't like about the film. Yeah. Just of three things.
But okay, so I don't. You do. Before we go further in.
Well, no, I gotta continue.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, you do have more. Okay. Yeah.
So basically, at this point, you know. I'm like, okay, this is, other than that, this is minor things. The film like is getting me like, and it's like I feel everything I should feel watching a movie. Like I understand everything, and I feel for the characters, and I feel like I'm in a movie, and I'm not taken out of it, and I'm not like analyzing in my head. Like, and the thing that I just really liked about it is that I felt like the kind of the crux of the film was taking some really complex philosophical and metaphysical concepts and really, really simplifying them to a point where, like, a 5-year-old would understand it. And that's – the whole time I was watching this film, I was kind of – I was analyzing it myself, trying to figure out, okay, what are the things – what are kind of, like, the – what's kind of, like, the ideology behind this film? And then I'm analyzing that as an adult, but then I'm also analyzing how would a kid react to it. And – basically, I felt like a kid would understand all the ideology and like what it's all meant to express through the characters and the events in this film. And I was like, that's fantastic. That's really cool. Because this is stuff that I know personally. This is stuff that I really got into it as an adult. This is stuff that I didn't understand fully until like only a few years ago. And I'm still like kind of learning about who I am and my connection to kind of like the universe and like what love really is and like all that stuff. I'm still learning that. And I feel like for kids to be exposed to that type of stuff in a story like this, compared to so many stories that come out that are for kids, this is a lot deeper, a lot more complex, and they're going to learn a lot more from something like this. And I understand why that might seem like not a deep enough film. When you're looking at it kind of as a critic, it may not seem deep enough. The characters might seem a little bit cardboard, but that's the point. This is not a character-based film. This is a film that is a metaphysical journey film, and I felt like it did its job with that by using the character as Meg as the centerpiece to experience everything, and then everything else is kind of like just kind of playing off of her. And so I don't know, it worked for me.
Okay.
All right.
Tiebreaker time.
Yes.
So, as Chris knows, I like everything. But I avoided like any of the reviews or what anybody was saying because having not read the book and having the previous conversations we had of whether this would be good or bad, I just went in complete clean slate with the exception of seeing the trailer a couple times.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I was underwhelmed.
Interesting.
I didn't hate it, but it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And now, full disclosure, I had a flat tire this morning, so I got in there a few minutes late.
Mm.
And like you were saying, it just jumps from point to point to point. I started to think, I think I missed more of this movie. Like, I think I missed a lot of it. So I hung around and waited for the next showing to see how much I missed, and I only missed a couple minutes.
Wow.
But I was like, why does the little kid seem to know everything? Like, what have I missed about him that makes him so important? And then towards the end, when they're like, you brought him to us, I'm like, oh, he must be really important. I need to watch the beginning of this movie. It seemed like it just – certain parts of it just kind of sped through. And what it felt like to me was I felt like maybe if I had read this, I would have liked it more in that I'm watching – well, I actually thought I would have a stronger opinion one way or another.
Mm.
Either I would be watching a beloved book come to life on the screen in a way I never could have imagined, or I'd be sitting here going, they got everything wrong.
Mm.
But having not read it, it was just you know.
Yeah,
I didn't hate it, but I definitely left thinking, now I'm going to read the book – and watch it again so that I can have an opinion.
That's a really good point. And obviously that's something that I can't speak to because I know the story very well. And this is one of the most vivid stories from my childhood. Like, there are very specific details of the story that I remember extremely well.
Because, it felt like they spent more time going, like, how are we going to take this scene and what, you know, how are we going to make it look?
Mm-hmm.
And having not read the book, it just, this film didn't do a whole lot for me. Like, I didn't leave there going, I can't wait to see it again.
The visuals were great. But it felt like that was the movie. It was watch us go from this cool place with this cool visual effect.
And as far as, like, to the next. Felt like they got into, like, what was it called? Tessering.
Yes.
I felt like that happened too soon. I'm like, we're already going? Like,
To me, it
felt like if I had sat down for Lord of the Rings and they said, instead of making 3-4-hour movies, we're going to do this whole thing in an hour and a half. And it just opens with, well, we got to take this ring.
it could have potentially benefited from a little bit stronger character development at the beginning of the movie on Earth first.
Yeah. Yes.
So that you felt more for the characters when they started going on this experience.
Having missed a few minutes, I felt like I missed a lot because I didn't know why I was supposed to care about anybody. It was just, we're just going. You know, we're going. So there was that.
For me, the real caring for the characters, it was a work in progress throughout the film. It wasn't something that was immediately there because you didn't have that time to get to know them. You got to know them kind of through the adventure, which may or may not have been a good choice, especially if that's how you reacted to it.
Yeah. It didn't get super interesting to me until they got to the beach.
Yeah, wow. And that's obviously towards the end of the movie.
Like, it was okay, and I was kind of like, where are we going with this?
Because for me, it was like, there's this enemy, this antagonistic force. And it's like, okay, oh, we actually get to see this antagonistic force other than this huge planet disaster. So it's like, okay, we're actually going to see some conflict now. Mm-hmm. And then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
because all the characters, you know, they're just puppets of this, the it. And that's what they're showing there is that it's not actually that guy with the red eyes, you know.
And from that point on the beach to when, we'll just say till when the enemy was defeated, I really enjoyed, but it also happened pretty quick. And then I was like, that's it?
Yeah.
And then the movie was over. And I was like, okay, I'm not sure how I feel about this.
Interesting.
And so this is something they mentioned in the book, but not in the movie. You said it felt like the little brother there knew everything. He's psychic.
Oh.
Like, you could kind of pick that up, but I also thought, am I supposed to assume he's psychic, or were they just being lazy and he's not psychic, and it just seems like
In the book, it is more... I mean, there are actual lines where they'll say, like, it almost felt like he knew what I was thinking.
And yes.
Stuff like that, where it doesn't, like, shove it in your face, but it does reference it.
It made sense, because when I went back to watch the beginning, and she said that, you know, having not seen this, I wish I had seen this one piece, the rest, when she comes downstairs, and was like, why didn't you come up? And he was like, because I knew you'd come down. I was like, okay.
Yeah, like, they tried, but they didn't do, like, enough. Or it... You know, I will give it the benefit of the doubt. It might be because I knew he was psychic, so because I already knew it, I didn't catch... Like, I caught that one at the beginning, but I didn't think there was enough. It might have just been because I already knew, so I didn't think to look for more.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was paying close enough attention, but maybe if I hadn't known,
he could have
been
psychic. From my point of view, he could have been psychic, or we've skipped 4 years of his life. Maybe she always comes downstairs when he's up, and he's just, you know, he knows he really does know she's going to. So I felt like I had missed the whole reason why he was important to the end of the story when they were like, you know, you brought him right to us. I was like, why does he matter?
I thought the reason why he was important was just because he was so brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I was going through as kind of a secondary thing other than the psychic things where you don't have to kind of realize that.
Right.
It's just because they portray him as just being a brilliant child and a special child.
Yes.
And it's kind of similar to, I don't know, like Ender from Ender's Game or whatever, someone like that who's just a prodigy.
But then I also didn't feel like I understood why what did the it need with a brilliant child? Like, what's the plan?
Well, I was assuming that the it just wants everybody.
I think in the book
it wasn't just him. He was just the only one he could get.
Yeah, and I think that was part of it in the book. Yeah. Because he was so brilliant and because he had the special ability, that's part of why it wanted him, because it was this powerful tool.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember from the book. So with the scene when they're separated from the missus and they're on three kids are on the planet alone, and then the field suddenly erupts into a bunch of trees.
Right.
In the book, were they separated like that, the younger brother and
that's one thing that when I saw it on the screen, I'm like, I have no memory of this happening this way.
And then it comes down to, okay, yeah. Maybe it was like that in the book, but as far as just the movie alone, and especially when you got to the end, that part didn't make sense because I get why you'd separate the younger brother because he wanted the younger brother, but then it made it clear that it also wanted sister.
It wants everybody.
But it wanted her, especially like over her friend. It wanted those two siblings, especially.
Yeah.
So why didn't it separate those two apart rather than separate the two?
I figured that the way to get to the other two is by getting to the younger brother first.
But it allowed him. But he was by himself for a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
I think it made sense to me when I was watching it. Like, I don't know
that part seemed odd to me. That once they got separated, like we have to find him. Let's catapult over the wall, and my brother's missing. But let's stop to wash our clothes.
I laughed at that part because she sees something get picked up in the tornado and then shot out, and then you can see what they were intending to be like. She's calculating something, but it's like okay. There's no way you could know where it's going to shoot off because it's completely random. And then
she says, like, this is the only way. It didn't buy it. There was no reason for her to know that there was no other way to get
it. I could see her getting shot off the other way.
It's another thing to say nothing else will work.
No, I think what she meant was that if they just stay there, they're not going to outrun it. So the only way that they could potentially survive is if they get thrown to safety. She doesn't know that they're going to get thrown to safety. She just knows they need to get out of there.
Well, no, she knows that she needs to get over because they're saying you have to get past the wall, and she sees get launched over
and
the wall.
She doesn't specifically know that it's going to get launched over the wall. She just knows that's an option.
But afterwards, he's like, how did you know that? She's just like, you know, physics.
Yeah, but she's talking about just the circular mention, and she calls it a slingshot and stuff. Like, she knows it's going to get hurled. I don't think she knows what direction in, but she just knows, like, well, if this thing hurls us away from it, then it's better than staying here and getting pounded by
the
debris.
Like, if she had seemed ambivalent about that or kind of, like, guessy, but, like, it made it come off where she was – where. The movie made it seem like she knew that would happen.
Yeah, I don't know if I felt that way. Yeah. But
that could have just been how I was reading it. But that part made me laugh because I was like, right before it showed her landing on the wall, it literally showed huge chunks of debris slamming into the wall.
So before that was one of the second moment of three in the film that I thought wasn't done super well that could have been improved was when she tesseras onto that planet and it's a field at first. They kind of cut right from her going into the tesser to, like, out of it, and there's still kind of music and stuff. I felt like it was paced too quickly, and they should have just paused for a second and had kind of silence as she was just laying there for a little bit while she was disoriented instead of having her go, like, right into.
Well, I thought that part wasn't because she was supposed to be disoriented because she didn't.
But they didn't. I didn't feel like they showed that well enough.
Well, but you just said you thought it should have been a cleaner cut.
No, not a cleaner cut. It should have been longer. There should have been some space to breathe there.
Well, but I think that's the point. She didn't have a chance to breathe. Like everyone else is able to do it easily. So I mean, this is disruptive for her. She's completely pulled.
Well, when I say breathe, I don't mean physically breathe. As an audience, I felt like there should have been kind of a moment of to collect your brain a little bit while you're watching it before going right into what's going on.
So for the audience to basically decompress.
Yes, to decompress because it's so fast-paced up until that point.
Because it's funny. I thought that was one of the few points it did well.
Interesting.
Just kind of fitting with it.
Yeah,
but
So, and then just kind of the third thing kind of going towards kind of like the ending of the movie. I mean, the movie had a very kind of emotional multi-climax thing that a lot of films have towards the end. And I don't know. I felt like the shot when, spoiler alert, fast forward 15 seconds if you haven't seen this, the shot where the mother sees the father again for the first time after 4 years, they cut to her after she already had the reaction on her face. I felt like they should have had the camera on her while she was, like, neutral-faced and then having the reaction. If they had cut to it, like, a few seconds earlier, I felt like it would have been a stronger portrayal.
Well, it's kind of like Patrick was saying. Some parts seemed rushed. Yeah. And I did – and, I mean, this part is more – this is definitely a personal gripe.
Yeah.
But with the – okay, when she's actually in the entity and it's like, I am the darkest mind in the universe.
Yeah.
And then she starts getting bullied. It's like, I guess this is a kid movie, but you think like the darkest mind in the universe would show her like her family being disemboweled in front of her.
Well, again, it's
a kid's movie.
And the point is to show that there's a line of good and evil between every person.
Yeah,
and
it's not a complaint I have with the movie.
Evil is portrayed in a very kind of like way that a kid can grasp in
this film. It's not a complaint I have with the movie. It's just like, I was just like... Yeah, that's not that dark, but
no, it's not. It's
oh
not.
No, but yeah. I don't hold that against the movie. Yeah, that's just
no. It would be interesting to see if this movie was made for like teens and adults. How different it would be.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I guess kind of final thoughts on this movie. It looks like we are just like the audience scores on Rotten Tomatoes.
Two against
one person thought it was a good movie. Two people were very.
I'll give it a second shot after I read the book.
But you're gonna give it a second shot.
Speaking of that, just before we move on, I just want to do an update from 2 weeks ago. I had said that I wanted to read Annihilation after seeing it. Mm-hmm. I went and read it.
Nice.
Very different.
Interesting.
Like, if you are feeling like I missed something in this movie, I'm going to read the book and get the answers.
Yeah.
You won't find them.
Yeah.
I still suggest it, but it's
yeah.
As I was mentioning before we went on air, the film really should have said very loosely based on the book.
That's funny.
But so would you suggest to the audience that it's better to see the movie or is the book better?
I enjoyed the movie more, but the book, especially if you do the audiobook, it's only 6 hours. It's a quick read, and it was still enjoyable. And it was like seeing two sides of a coin, just like very different version. But you clearly are getting the same story, but vastly different. And I'll leave it at that because anything I say would spoil the book
at this point.
If I even mention what's different. But I just wanted to recommend it because I did enjoy the book having seen the movie.
Definitely check that
out. Should I touch on Thoroughbreds real quick?
Yes. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so I saw Thoroughbreds. If you've seen any of the trailers for it, that's exactly what the movie is. The story is incredibly simple, but it's executed really well. I can definitely see it's not going to have a huge...
For someone like me that hasn't even seen the trailer... Give me a.
I mean, okay, it's a weird, I don't know, coming of age. It's a weird story with two ending high school age teenage girls who are both have some mental disorder, and they're both incredibly solipsistic. And that's the movie.
Basically, okay. Interesting.
In the trailer, I don't. I feel like, if it was said in the trailer, do you mind if I mention it?
No.
It's in the trailer. It's. Two girls. One of them says. One of them hates her stepfather. The other one says, "You should kill him." And that's the movie.
Got it.
They're both bit deranged in different ways, but kind of fits together well. And they're both incredibly solipsistic. And plus, it's also Anton Yelchin's last movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
wow.
which was nice seeing him. But it's like it's a very simple movie. The sound design is flawless. The camera work is beautiful. I'd say it's a technically perfect movie. But the story is simple, and it is a bit drawn out at parts. But, I mean, that's just the movie it was. Mm-hmm. It didn't leave anything out. It didn't need anything to fill this or fill that hole. I feel like there was one more thing I was going to say about it. Oh, I was going to say, I think just like Annihilation, come the two-week mark, I'd be surprised if it made double digits in the millions as far as its box office.
So as compared to Wrinkle in Time, this is your pick of the week?
I mean, of the two movies I saw, you also have Death Wish, Game Night, Peter Rabbit. Yeah. I will say, when I went to go see Wrinkle in Time, I was like, oh, I really want to go see Peter Rabbit instead.
I heard Game Night was a good film. I haven't seen it, but I've heard a few of my friends have seen it.
They say it's going to be a fun movie.
It's decent. Yeah.
But so, yeah, between the two, I would recommend Thoroughbreds over Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, I definitely going to have to check that out at some point.
Or just recommend it in general.
So moving on to our next topic, we're going to be talking a little bit of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Ron, to bring us in.
You get to speak now.
I know, I actually get to talk. I actually get to throw a few words in. But it was interesting to hear everybody's perspective about A Wrinkle in Time. And it almost seems like everybody was in consensus about the movie, you know, especially in comparison to the book and the cinematic adaptation as well, too. But yes, talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., 100 episodes, amazing, amazing, amazing. I was actually fortunate enough to go attend an exclusive fan screening of the 100th episode.
Oh, wow.
With the entire cast, both current and past. Wow. I can't even begin to mention who was there.
Every actor,
almost every actor. Not all of them, but a lot of the major fan favorites were there. Brett Dalton. Brett Dalton was playing Agent Grant Ward / Hive. J. August Richards, who was Mike Peterson, Deathlock, and the amazing Constance Zimmer playing Rosalind Price. Coy Stewart was playing an Inhuman in Flint. I mean, the list goes on. So the fan event was an amazing experience because you did get to see everybody on stage. 20 people on stage. Including including the executive producers Jeff Bell, Marissa Tancharan, and Jed Whedon. You know, obviously one of the Whedon brothers sharing the same last name with that legacy. And I can't tell you how much since day one I've loved this show. And I know there's a lot of people who watched the show, tried to give it a chance, but it didn't fulfill what they felt was right.
That would be me, unfortunately.
Marvel television show. That's, hey, fair enough. And it wasn't for everyone, but for everybody who was excited to see what actually happened and how this series came about after Agent Phil Coulson died. Obviously, after the first Avengers movie, he was literally stabbed in the back by Loki with his scepter. Here comes Agent Phil, and we're like, where did he come from? How is this series come alive?
Hashtag Coulson lives.
Yeah, hashtag Coulson lives, exactly. And then they also began with hashtag It's All Connected as well, too. They've come so far, and this episode was definitely it was basically the deal. We're left wanting to know, okay, what had happened since the arc and the ending of season four when Agent Phil Coulson, played by the amazing, humble, hilarious, I can't praise him enough, Clark Gregg, has played in this pivotal role in this entire series, how he made a deal with the Ghost Rider. Obviously, in season four, one of the best highlights of that season was the actor Gabriel Luna playing Robbie Reyes, a.k.a. Ghost Rider. And this is not the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider. This is Robbie Reyes. Ghost Rider, who is based on the comics by Felipe Smith. Coulson was revived as it was portrayed in, I believe, season two, beginning of season two or end of season one. Correct me if I'm wrong, if you're listening, by Cree Blood. Mm-hmm. So, and that was a plan initially planned out by Nick Fury, who was the former director of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., former director of S.H.I.E.L.D., I should say. So in that, he's had this basically internal patch for his body the whole time, and he made this deal with Ghost Rider, which eventually burned off that Kree patch that was in him the whole time. And so the whole team for this entire season, in season five, doesn't know that Coulson is dying. But in a miraculous thing where this whole season so far has played with the whole weird concept again, about space and time, they go back into their current state trying to find out what's been happening with the world and trying to save the world. And here comes, in a Doctor Who fashion, this time rift that comes in, and it's Coulson's basically mission, I would say, to try and close this rift. Now, this rift actually plays on each of the characters' fears. And it was almost like, I almost saw the reflections of Age of Ultron, where you have Scarlet Witch actually kind of manipulating all of their minds to seeing what their fears would be. Excuse me. And in it, we actually get to see this episode actually come full circle from the very first pilot episode. Because, for one thing, J. August Richards was a huge fan favorite when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. First premiered, and it was a complete turnaround, because you've got to see excuse me,
that awkward moment when you're the only one talking,
a little tickle in the back of my throat. It was Coulson in the pilot episode that was actually trying to encourage Deathlok or Mike Peterson's character or August Richards' character, Mike Peterson, a.k.a. Deathlok, soon to become Deathlok, become a hero, become something more. And in this episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., J. August Richards actually confronts Clark Gregg again at full-on Deathlok gear. Like, he's complete cyborg, new gear on, and he's the one trying to encourage Phil that he's meant for something more. He's done so much. But this episode also plays on Clark Gregg's fear as that rift starts to take effect on him. Because we get a whole mind-blowing experience of this fear version of Deathlok, basically telling him that you're still on this table. Everything you see is just an illusion. Everything that you see that you wanted to is playing on the team that you wanted to have. The daughter that you've wanted to have, who it's not an actual daughter, and he was actually using it metaphorically because of that established relationship between him and Daisy Johnson, aka Quake, on that show. And they've built such a father-daughter relationship on that show. I shouldn't say mother. I mean,
he could Quake be. Me, Chloe.
Oh my God, Quake. everything that Phil has wanted to have. But playing on the fears. But prior to that, he tells Deke, and I'll get to Deke later because that was the way that story turned out was just mind blowing. He sends Deke out on a special mission, and we don't know what that mission was. Obviously, Deke had come from the future, now back with the agents in their present time. But that mission is obviously classified, and That's pulling a Phil Coulson. That's definitely pulling his character together in like these top secret missions. Obviously, he was the one that kind of also resurrected or had that whole plan of resurrecting the helicarrier for Age of Ultron. And he also called in the Avengers, too, for Age of Ultron as well, too, to basically get Loki's scepter. But we're at that point, and the... I lost my train of thought now. Deke is being sent out on this mission, and Deathlok actually comes back with Deke, which was the response in that mission. Deathlok actually comes back and saves Clark Gregg from all his fears. Remember initially I said that he was facing a fear version of Deathlok. Now the real Deathlok comes in, helps out Clark Gregg in an amazing, amazing sequence of a fight put together by, I have to give credit to Mark Kolpak. Mark Kolpak is the visual effects supervisor on the show and did this amazing...
The effects look really good. Like, I remember the first few seasons I watched, like, it looked very similar to what you see on screen, which is an amazing feat for television.
It's exactly. It's maintained that budget for, like, it's... I can't tell you how many social fan reactions have been mentioned towards Mark Kolpak about like his talent being so cinematic. And you know we can't credit Mark Kolpak without his mention about his other visual effects team as well too, who've done an amazing job in supplementing his work. But as far as everything's come in this episode, it was definitely fast-paced because it was that emotional where they're trying to really condense so many of these stories and closing so many plot holes from the previous season and the previous seasons as well, too, as to how this team has come together. And this team has been reliant on Clark Gregg being their leader, and he's been consistent I said Clark Gregg, but Phil Coulson, you know what I'm talking about, as their leader in this team so much. And when Phil actually tried to go into the rift and actually save the entire team, that's when Quake, Daisy Johnson, Agent Mays, played by the amazing Ming-Na Wen, and Ian, and everybody is all deciding to go in. They want to sacrifice themselves because they feel like they're the ones that Phil has been through so much already. And has had so much of the weight on his shoulders and led this team so far that they feel like they're the ones who's sacrificing. But it eventually does become Phil, who doesn't die. He still lives. Hashtag Coulson lives.
He's still alive.
Still alive.
I feel like Phil Coulson is like the Ahsoka of the Marvel franchise.
He's a Marvel. He's literally the Captain America on Marvel TV right now. The Marvel, because he still instills values. And even in a past episode, he... has this thing programmed on his arm where he actually activates a holographic shield.
Nice.
That's almost reminiscent of Captain America's shield.
You're right.
It's entirely reminiscent of his shield.
Oh, he's because Coulson is a big fanboy of Cap, so I mean he wants the trading card signed, which unfortunately didn't happen. It's a great episode. I just can't talk about this episode so much. We only have so much time.
So I have a question for you because I caught up through the end of last season. but I usually end up watching it on Hulu, and they only keep the last five. So if you fall behind, you're out of luck until they put the whole season up on Netflix. So, so I didn't jump in right. I forgot it had come back, and so once I realized that some episodes had already been taken down that I hadn't watched, I was like, I'm just gonna wait. 100th episode, was it more of just like, since this is the 100th, we're just gonna throw all these former cast members in and make a big spectacle? Which is fine. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Or was it also like, we're wrapping up a lot of things, and if you go to start at 101, you can kind of jump in fresh? Like, can I come back to this? Or with the episode following this, do you think they're starting a new arc? Or should I still wait and watch the whole season?
I really think that this was more of an episode that was kind of like a love letter to their fans, gotcha, reaching especially at like a landmark episode. Mm-hmm. And
but not not as much as like tying stuff off so we could start fresh the next one.
The thing that tied this up is the most was probably very two-pronged. It was definitely showing what Coulson was dealing with in the deal with Ghost Rider, mm-hmm, because he made that deal in the last season. Plus, it's been kind of teased around, and some people have some of the fans have theorized about this. We finally get to see what has become of that whole hashtag Fitzsimmons relationship,
gotcha,
between Agent Fitz and Agent Gemma Simmons in their long-lasting relationship on the series. Obviously, the fans have been wanting to, mm-hmm, see what becomes of that, and it's blossomed into a more relationship this season. Even as when the excellent Gemma Simmons was trying a slave under the Kree, the Kree had put some type of blocking device in their ear so they could not hear what's being said, and then in this one critical scene, Ian DeKexter's character Agent Fitz says to her, "Will you marry me?" But she can't hear it. Mm. So later on, as the series progressed, we see that Phil actually asks Fitz to do something as well too, and we actually get to see what becomes of that. And here's Fitz talking in an elevator. In a funny scene, Fitz is actually stalling in an elevator. We see now in this forest that's underneath this bunker, the lighthouse that they were in. If it was the lighthouse, I'm not sure. He and Fitz and Simmons get married. And the big reveal was Deke, who we've been watching this whole time in the future, is the grandson.
Gotcha.
I totally spoiled it for you, but is the grandson of Fitz and Simmons, which was really like a very emotional scene, and it was kind of like a balance between. I wish the writers hadn't done this so much, but they provided a little bit of comic relief on these edited scenes on the side where you see Deathlok and Deke actually having like some type of sidebar conversation about their whole relationship and about the whole relationship between Fitz and Simmons, and that's when it was revealed that they had that grandson, which was Deke. So that I felt that was amazing. But in the interest of time, from my whole experience with this series, you know, this is one of the series that I in no shame, undoubtedly, I would say that this is my favorite television show right now.
That's awesome.
They've developed so much in diversity. They've had so much of a diversity in cast, which a lot of the fans have expressed so much on the show. A lot of good representation, a lot of outspoken individuals. They've inspired so many for cosplayers. These characters have inspired their little girls' personal lives, having to overcome depression and basically go on with their dreams. And I love that about the show, that during that fan event, they've talked so much. They've dropped so much F-bombs. And by F-bombs, I mean family. Can't tell you how many times they've mentioned how much this cast has been a family. Even Constance Zimmer mentioned, just quickly, that she's never seen a cast like this before, actually treating each other like family, you know, both in inside and outside. For those people who follow the cast and crew on social media, you can see that their interactions with each other are genuinely family, that even some of them from the past still hang out and talk to the current cast members. So that's pretty much my love letter to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So thank you to everybody who's been following me on Instagram, being a fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and all the cast members, thank you very much, Mo and Jed and Ming and Chloe and Clark. everybody, just that, everybody.
That sounds like an amazing experience. Patrick, we're going to say bye to you right now because we'll be bringing in a guest. But quickly, where do the people follow you on social media?
Patrick on the mic on Twitter and Instagram.
Check that out. So on the podcast that aired before this, the Hollow Feed, I talked a little bit about my experience down at the Star Ceremony for Mark Hamill. So definitely listen to that podcast to hear my thoughts on that. And our guest is here. Put on those headphones. If you don't know him already, this is the YouTuber Chris Howard. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Welcome.
I feel very welcomed.
Yes. And Chris is a vlogger primarily on YouTube, and he's got his vlog camera right here.
Are you filming right now?
I do.
Yes. Oh my gosh, right, we are on his vlog. We are now
hashtag YouTube famous. We're gonna be the next PewDiePie, just minus that little slip up.
Yes.
Oh snap.
Ooh, ouch.
We are starting out strong here.
Right out of the gate.
I love you, Felix. No hard feelings.
Right out of the gate. Chris, just so people can get to know you a little bit, do you wanna talk quickly about just what type of videos you do and then just kind of why you're passionate about making those videos? What made you choose this kind of career path?
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Chris Howard. I daily vlog, which I've always kind of been making vlogs basically my whole life. Like, literally, my I used to, like, steal my mother's point-and-shoot out of her purse when she wasn't looking.
When you were, like, a two-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, did your mom know this? Does your mom know now?
Oh, she knew then.
She goes to get it developed, and she's like, what?
Yeah.
Again.
So, like, I've always been kind of making videos. I would just, I'd just keep them within the family. I'd show my mom or make them sit down and watch my videos. And one day, I was also one of those kids that was, like, basically convinced that, oh, YouTube is full of stalkers that will come and, murder me. So I didn't want anything to do with YouTube at the time. This was, like, 2010, I want to say. And my father, actually, because he works in, like, tech, right? He's very connected with that whole world. He was like, nah, it's fine. He put one of my videos on YouTube. Ooh. And, of course, I kind of freaked out, but a couple months later.
Get all these stalkers. What did you do, Dad?
I think it got 100 views. And so I was expecting
100 stalkers.
Yeah, stopped on the street.
In 2010?
I think this was 2011 at this point. A year really
later,
remember,
yeah.
Yeah, and since then, like, I kind of said, well, I guess this is a thing now. So I started posting every week, and it's something that, because I've always, like, done it, it's just part of my life. Like, I can't imagine life without a camera in my hand.
It's, like, attached to you, actually.
Yeah, literally.
You can't see it. It's a little invisible string, but if I tried to pull the camera, it wouldn't work. Your body would come with it.
Yeah, it's like at a party. Like, I don't see, oh, this is something that I should engage in. It's how can I get good shots from this?
Yes.
And, I mean, some people might say, like, no, put the camera down, live in the moment. But this is how I live in the moment.
Yeah. That's really cool because, that moment then lasts forever, which is awesome.
Because I have horrible long-term or short-term memory.
That's crazy. I was going to ask about that because I know some people who are very obsessive with getting footage from everything, and those people are people who have bad memories.
So it's
almost like you're – and again, it's like that evolution from human to cyborg where you're using vlogging as your memory essentially, which
is
interesting.
This is very true.
Oh, I'm not even going to deny that that's what's happening. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy to me because, like, we lost all of our photos from a hard drive failure from 2012 to 2014. So, like, those years of my life, I have no memory of either.
Wow.
And so, but now I have, like, I can go back to any day in the past year and remember exactly what we did that day. And that's so cool.
That is really awesome. So where do you kind of see your career going from here? Like, are there certain things you want to accomplish that you have yet to accomplish?
Well, and I think before that, how long have you been, like, professionally, or would you consider yourself a professional vlogger?
I mean, sure.
At what point does one become a professional vlogger?
So here, I'll put it this way. At the level you are producing now, how long have you been producing at this level?
Well, I was, consistently posting, or my specific rate of upload?
Let's say when you turned it from a hobby into something you were like, okay, I'm regularly going to be doing this.
Probably since 2014.
Okay, so you've been at this for 4 years. Okay.
Yeah. And I was doing weekly until, actually a year ago, I decided I want to try daily, but that was on a second channel because I didn't trust myself.
Oh, yeah. I remember that moment when there were many channels of yours, and I was like, which one?
I have way too many channels.
Yes.
But yeah, and so it was only actually this January that I completed a full year of daily vlogging on my second channel. I was like, okay, I know what I'm doing. Mm. I can do this.
Yeah.
And so I started posting on the main, and it's been going decently well, I think.
That is. So as far as the future is concerned, then, like, what are you looking to do in the future? Just continue what you're doing now?
I mean, I would love to do that. Like, honestly, I'm having a blast.
Yeah.
Like, I sure don't do it because of the money.
I was just going to say, how's the YouTube adpocalypse been hitting you? Because what's it now? You need to have several tens of thousands of viewers 4, a month. 000, and 4,000 viewers.
I believe it's 4,000 watch hours on YouTube.
4,000 watch hours. Oh,
1,000 subscribers and at least 10,000 views on your channel.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Wow. Yeah.
It kills a lot of smaller YouTubers.
Thankfully, that didn't really affect me on my main channel because I'm a little past that. Thank you, guys.
But I'm here.
I think he's thinking his fans, not you.
Oh. You're a fan, though, right?
Yeah.
We're all fans.
Maybe. You're here.
We're all fans down here.
Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, so that really hasn't affected me too much, which I'm very grateful. That's but I do have some friends that got hit by that, and they're upset, which...
Understandable.
Yeah, that's a whole.
But that is cool that it does that. This is looking like something that will be fruitful for you now and in the future, and something you can continue doing going forward.
I hope so, because like I growing up, I always knew I was going to do something with cameras. I just kind of assumed when I was a kid, like, oh, I'm going to make movies. But the problem with making movies is that like the great thing about vlogging. The great thing about vlogging for me is like kind of I'm going to sound like such a control freak, but like I'm in control of everything.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no distribution. If I want to change something, I don't need to go to five other people. I just like, oh, I want to do this. Now I want to do this. And then in editing, I can just hit upload and that's it.
Yeah, you have so much creative control, and that's absolutely fantastic. While you've been vlogging, kind of what are some of the vlogs that you've done that you're like really proud of, or just some really cool things that you've done on screen over the years?
Pretty much anytime I go down to Santa Monica. I love Santa Monica. But yeah, I mean, the first time I really posted a video and I was like, wow, I'm genuinely really proud of that, was that my first time going to the 2016 VidCon. That was like the first time I really put...
And that was actually the first video of yours that I saw, finally.
Hey! Glad you saw the quality.
Yes.
But yeah, like pretty much any big event that I go to, like, I don't know, vacations. There was a meetup from a YouTuber that I really enjoy in Nashville. That's actually where I met you.
Yeah, that's where we met. Shout out to the Blind Macau guys and to Kevin McCurry.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you have yet still to do, like something that you would cross off your bucket list as far as your vlogging goes that you still haven't covered? You're like, I've got to do this one day. This is like my ultimate goal, whether it's recording somebody as a big celebrity or, you know, doing something for the media, or what would that be?
This is going to sound like such a stereotypical answer, but like, it'd be great to be like, get the yellow badge at VidCon, like the all access.
Yeah.
Like, just, I don't know. I found what I love to do, and it'd be great to like, be with a lot of other people that I know like the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would love to do that too. That would be amazing. I got really lucky one time at VidCon where I was helping some friends over at a booth. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, you know, there's going to be a creator mixer in here after it gets shut down to the public. And this is going to be when the creators have a chance to come in and talk to the vendors and, you know, hang out. And I'm like, can I, like, kind of hide under your table? And I basically almost... It almost came to that a few times, where there was security going around making sure everybody had the vendor passes or the all-access passes, and I'm just kind of, like, hiding over in the corner, like, no one look at me, no one look at me. I might have had to pretend that I lost it for a second. I don't know. But somehow I stayed in there. I met a lot of really, really cool people. I got to meet the guy behind it all, John Green. Like,
nice.
It was amazing.
Nice.
So to be able to not have to hide under a table to talk to those people would be, oh, that would be the dream. I could feel feel that. I feel that. That's awesome.
The question is, have you actually met Hank Green, though?
No, I haven't.
And then for those who aren't familiar with your channel, what sort of daily vlogging do you do? Is it comedy, journalism, kind of daily life?
I almost kind of consider it like part of a reality TV show. That's kind of how I try to edit it. So it's not a, I mean, like, it's, of course I'm going to bring up Casey Neistat because...
Well, I was about to ask you, what are some YouTubers that have really inspired you through this process?
Honestly, there's like three big ones. Obviously, I'm going to say Casey because he's like the vlogger. There's also some of my friends, Twin Sauce. They have been doing daily for almost 2 years now, and they're like huge inspirations for me. Mm-hmm. And then I just discovered this guy, Left Coast, something like that. And like, I don't know, my vlogs always kind of unintentionally mimic whoever I've been watching a lot of. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, you got to take a piece of everything, you know, and take the best parts of certain things and put them together and then make something new out of it. That's really cool. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes, thank
you. Chris is going to stick around. We're going to talk a little bit about the Oscars and our reaction to that before we close out the show. But before we do, I just want to make sure that everybody knows how to get to Chris's work online.
YouTube.com/ChrisPorterHoward.
Look at that. Did you hear that voice?
Maybe you should be doing radio. That's awesome. All right, so moving on to the Academy Awards briefly. We gave our predictions last week on what we thought would happen.
So glad I was wrong about Best Picture.
You know, I was wrong as well about Best Picture myself. Shape of Water ended up taking it.
I think everyone who discussed it, we all wanted it to win, but we didn't think it would.
Yeah, exactly.
And we were proved wrong, and I'm sure all of us were equally happy to be proved wrong in that case.
Yes.
Have you seen, you familiar with that movie, Shape of Water?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think it was? How do you think of it?
I went in not knowing, not having any like expectations whatsoever. I didn't know anything about the movie.
Same with me when I went into it.
Well, fun fact, we actually we went to go see it because it was actually my grandmother's birthday, and we were like, oh, let's go see this movie's nominated for the Academy Awards. I'm not going to spoil anything, but the opening scene, imagine sitting there and watching that with your grandmother.
Yeah, I can imagine the scene you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was glad I didn't see it with anybody. I was really glad.
I saw it with my parents.
Oh.
Fun.
Well, interesting.
Oh, my gosh. So that was what ended up winning Best Picture. I believe you correctly predicted Best Actor, RJ. Gary Oldman,
yes,
you thought had a really good shot at it for Darkest Hour, and he did. And that, of course, was a film that I hadn't seen, but between what you were saying about the film and between what they were saying on the Academy Awards, definitely going to watch that movie. Like, looks absolutely fantastic. One that I actually got right was Best Actress, Frances McDormand from Three Billboards.
Yeah,
that
after I, yeah. What was the, was it Golden Globes came out right, that was right before?
Yeah.
It's like after that, it's... Yeah. I think if I had seen that, then I probably would have predicted likewise because, I watched that afterwards. It was like, there's no way she wasn't going to get it.
Yeah. Oh, it was fantastic performance, and she definitely, definitely deserves it. And pretty good speech on the Oscars as well. Definitely check it out. Guillermo del Toro for Shape of Water won Best Director. Not really surprising there. I don't think we predicted Best Director.
I think all we talked about was Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Actress.
Yes. So he took that, not super surprising. And then just a few other ones to kind of run down. Best Supporting Actor went to Sam Rockwell from Three Billboards.
I did predict that one.
You did?
Yeah.
And Allison Janney from I, Tonya got the Best Supporting
I think Lauren from last episode, she predicted that one.
Yes, she got that for sure. And that's another film that I really have to watch, I, Tonya, that I caught. Shape of Water took Best Original Music Score. That's Alexander Desplat's work, and that doesn't surprise me too much. This is interesting. Best Writing Adapted Screenplay went to Call Me By Your Name, which is a film that I ended up watching afterwards. And I can't remember, was that one? That was one that none of us had
that
seen.
That wasn't one that none of us had seen. Loosely described it.
Yes. So I did end up watching that movie, and it was fantastic. It was a pretty good coming-of-age movie. That honestly, like, the cinematography and pacing of the film reminded me of like a 1980s movie. Like, and not in the way that, like, Stranger Things makes you think of 1980s. Like, it was – it was just had – all the shots were kind of a lot of wider shots, longer shots, not a lot of fast cuts. The score was kind of very kind of like 80s, 90s drama, rom-com almost, family movie. And yet, you know, it's obviously a movie that has a decent amount of mature content. The storyline, there's some similarities in the storyline between this film and the French film, Blue is the Warmest Color, but it's not as explicit as Blue is the Warmest Color. So if you want a good coming-of-age movie about someone kind of learning about who they are and learning about their sexuality, this is a tamer film that you could that you could watch, that you might not feel as uncomfortable watching with your mother or father or family members.
Or grandmother.
Or grandmother.
Yeah, that
so,
makes a bit of sense.
Yes. And then cinematography went to Blade Runner 2049, which
didn't see that coming.
I love the cinematography.
That movie came and went, and I thought nothing of it other than a cash grab.
Best original screenplay went to Get Out. Not too surprising there. That was a very good film. Editing went to Dunkirk. And production design, of course, went to Shape of Water. Not surprising.
Yeah.
Not surprising there as well. All the categories that Star Wars The Last Jedi were nominated in, it lost all the categories, mainly to Dunkirk in most of the categories.
Probably not as surprising in that category. In those categories.
And the one other note that is notable from the Oscars is Kobe Bryant now has an Oscar.
That was a very interesting – but you know what? I do have to speak on that. I have to jump in on this because I was actually at the last year. It was actually premiered last year during one of the the amazing conductor and composer, John Williams, who's obviously known from scoring the Star Wars movies, scored that little short film.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was debuted at the Hollywood Bowl, where I went to go watch John Williams, and just the scenes, like the audience was quiet. Mm-hmm. They were watching it with so much intent, and it was beautifully animated. For anybody who hasn't seen. MVP, it was all sketch animation, basically. And it was amazingly done. Very poetic, very well written, obviously, by Kobe Bryant, about his experience about growing up in the game, obviously known for his basketball skills.
And I think if there's a movie that can make everyone in the audience actually shut up,
it's John Williams.
Well, that and as a general, if it can make the audience shut up, it probably did something right. So it's probably worth a watch.
Yeah.
Ignoring the fact that it won an award, I mean, you can. There is that too, I guess.
Yeah. You know. It was. I was kind of like, oh my gosh, Kobe Bryant. Out of all, like, who's it? Like,
there's so many people that have not won Oscars.
Meryl Streep?
No. Meryl Streep has won an Oscar.
Oh, she has. That's right.
Yes, plenty.
Meryl Streep's been in this years, and Kobe just won one time.
Yes. But no. It's funny how there's some random people, like rappers and athletes, that have Oscars, and others don't. But it has to do with the categories. Some categories are kind of more, you know, different, you know, than your typical, you know, actor, director type categories. So that's all the time that we have for Geek Radio today. Don't turn off, though. A podcast about anime is coming up. RJ, what are you guys going to be talking about on Podcast About Anime?
What are we going to be talking about anime, I believe?
Tokyo Ghoul Re.
Yeah, Tokyo Ghoul Re.
And a movie about
food. Oh, and we're also going to be talking about Food Wars or Shokugeki no Soma.
Imagine some book club manga stuff and just miscellaneous things that are happening.
So
I would have to look at
that. Tune into that or listen to that podcast on Radio Free Podcasting if you're listening to this with your headphones and not your eyes. but that'll do it for this episode of Geek Radio. You can follow us on social media at KPFK Geek Radio. And make sure you tweet at us there on Twitter. We also have an Instagram as well, and that's, of course...
Or even email us, kpfkgeekradio@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you're interested in contributing to our team, we're always looking for people to come in for hosts, to come in for segments. We like having cool guests like Chris
Mark
on
Hamill.
The show.
Mark Hamill.
We know you're watching. We'd love to have you in the studio. Send us an email at kpfkgeekradio. Clark Gregg, anybody... That's geeky.
And I can confirm they treat their guests very well.
That's right.
We're extra gentle.
Yes. We give our guests Uber rides. Only in extreme circumstances.
Discount coupons from their own pocket.
So where can they find you, Chris?
So they can find me on Twitter at Seek3PO. Ron, where can people find you on social media?
That One Nerd Ron on Twitter and Instagrammable.
And RJ.
You can find me at Need Bookcase on Twitter.
And other than your YouTube channel, Chris, or any other social media that you want to plug?
I'm pretty much at Chris Porter Howard on everything except for Twitter, which I haven't still haven't switched
over. It's too long for Twitter.
It is.
Yeah.
And someone already took Chris Howard.
CPH.
Who are you, other Chris? Give him his username back.
At Pondiddly, PUNDIDDLEY.
Check that out. And just so you know, if you're on the right YouTube channel or not, I noticed that there's still some Pun Diddly stuff here and there on your YouTube channel that you haven't figured out how to get rid of.
Still
so that's a little bit of a confirmation. And we also want to give thanks to Patrick for being on earlier in the show and Claire for manning the boards. And this amazing beat that you're hearing right now is Josiah Kavanaugh's Search Artificial Paradise. And you will find his stuff online. He's got a new EP out, definitely. Check that out. So we'll be back, same time, same place, next week. Until then, keep on geeking on.